This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. For some, the insurance provided by the Affordable Care Act is even better than expected. For others, it means paying a lot more money, and there are some who just want to find out but can't make the website work. This afternoon, we'll talk about how the rollout has been going and what the biggest issues and concerns have been in its first 3 weeks. Joining me are health law fellow with the Kentucky Equal Justice Center, Kara Stewart, Ohio Association of Food Banks Deputy Director Jason Elkert, who's joining us on the phone, and Interact for Health Vice President for Policy and External Relations, Catherine Keller. We'd like to hear from you, too. You can call us at 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us and on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Glad to have you all here. Let's start with one place that we're hearing all kinds of great news out of Kentucky, and we'll start with you, Kara. Tell us how things are going with Kentucky or Connect.
Well, the best I can tell, things are going pretty good. Our numbers look good. We've had over 47,000 people start applications on connect.ky.gov, spelled K-Y-N-E-C-T.ky.gov. So that's pretty good news, and I've been on there most days and haven't had any sort of problems with the website, putting information in or moving around. I think the only sort of thing we've run into in Kentucky is people going through far enough to see when their subsidies are applied. It's very easy to get to the sticker price, which only 8% of uninsured Kentuckians pay. Those are very easy to get to. And so I've talked to a lot of consumers who see those prices and then click that red X in the corner of their browser because they don't want to have anything to do with that number. Instead of completing the process.
So that number is a lot higher than most people would end up paying. Is that what
right.
you're saying?
Right, yeah. Because in Kentucky, around 92% of our uninsured are eligible for some sort of assistance by the way of Medicaid expansion or an advanced premium tax credit. So only 8% would pay that price, but everyone sees that price first. And you have to keep going through the system to get your income in and then figure out what your assistance level will be based on the second cheapest silver plan. So it takes a few more steps to keep going to figure that out.
Now, you said how many have applied so far?
Over 47,000. The governor updates pretty regularly at his website, governor.ky.gov, and the most recent numbers were 47,069 applications and 18,370 enrolled.
So the 18,000 is how many people have completed, gotten it done, and are mm-hmm. signed up starting in January?
Yes.
And how about you, Catherine? How are things going with what you're doing?
So in Ohio, we have the federal health insurance marketplace. And that has had its challenges and that has made national news. They've had a very public and difficult time rolling out the marketplace.
The president, in fact, talking about that just yesterday.
Yes, he did. And they had they started off with the overabundance of people of signing on. And so there were millions of people on the first day who sort of, clogged up the system. So they didn't even really know what the bugs were yet, essentially, until people started listening coming on. And then a lot of the glitches came out. But as the president said yesterday, this is extremely common in new technology. And when you look at people, you give the example of an iPhone, a new operating system comes out. There's always glitches, and so it's about the third time in they release the new operating system that is when you download it. So it's not uncommon for technology to have this problem.
Jason, what have you found so far?
Well, what we're finding, in addition to what Kate has said, we're really using October and the beginning of November, what we're calling kind of an educational and preparation month. And now what we have noticed, though, using healthcare.gov in Ohio, is that it is picking up the ability to handle more and more consumers. And we're actually starting to see the very beginnings where folks are getting through the website. They're at least able to apply, and they're actually starting to be able to see the plans and so forth. And so some of that just started this week, and we're very grateful that some of that has come online. What we have done so far is scheduled nearly 30 community events all around the state where we're going around and we're doing a lot of education. We're playing folks some videos where they can at least see kind of healthcare.gov in action, and they're finding that very helpful. And then for folks that really want an appointment, what we're doing is we're actually calling those folks. We're kind of scheduling tentative appointments, but we're maintaining contact with them and then mailing them kind of an educational packet, which talks about these are all the items that you're going to need to have when you sit down with us for an appointment, or what you need to bring together and so forth. So even though healthcare.gov has been a little bit slow to get rolled out, we're still making progress here in Ohio, which is great.
Now, some people really just want information. They're maybe not sure if they want to even take part in all of this, if they, you know, have other options, all those sorts of things. Is there a way to go and get information without giving your name, without, you know, giving all those details and just get some comparisons?
Absolutely. On healthcare.gov, on the home page, it just says see available plans. So if you click that button and pick your state, and they'll ask you what county you live in, and then it'll then ask you if you want to look for yourself or your family or for a small business, and then the plans will pop up. So you can look at sort of the very basic description of what the plans are and how much they cost.
Now, will those be those higher prices because they don't know all the details?
Yes, it does. It does explain to you before you get to the prices that these are the total cost, and if you qualify for a tax credit, it gives you the amount of income that you would have or where you'd fall. So there is some explanation before you get to the big price, but of course that does not include any tax.
So there's really no way then without registering to know what you personally would pay.
Correct. You'd have to actually put in the information, and then it would go through the system and do the verification, and then tell you what your tax credits would be.
The same is true in Kentucky. I mean, you can see the plans. You can look right now and see what I think 170 is the cheapest for someone my age with no subsidy, no assistance. The most expensive one was around 350, and a premium, of course, with different additional costs and copays. But the same thing is true. You can see those plans really easily. Going on, there's a button that says show plans, but you're not going to get what your personal cost would be because they can't have calculated the tax implications for you, which turns into your subsidy.
How does it work if you've got a family? Are there family plans versus single plans? Does each person have to sign up on their own? How does that work?
Oh, no. On Connect, so I'm unfamiliar with the federal exchange, mm-hmm. so I'm deferring to the other
well,
two people
on the
call.
Well, you can each answer. You answer about Connect.
But the Connect, you enter as a household, right, because we pay our bills as households and you know, children don't have their own income. So you put in as a household. But then each individual member of that household may have differing eligibility. So you put everybody in, and then it creates a little image for each person. And then you can say for that person if they need coverage or if they don't need coverage, if they need dental or just medical embedded. And then there's some more questions about each person in the household to see their individual eligibility.
Okay.
So that is true also on the federal marketplace. So on healthcare.gov, it allows you, if you just want to look, you can look at plans for single people, you can look at plans for families, children only, you know, a parent and children without spouse. So they give you all the options. So you can purchase them however your family needs.
And this is very similar to what you might do at a workplace, then.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. That's the purpose, is to put people who work for a small business in the same position they would be if they worked at a larger business that offered, you know, a large group employer plan.
Jason?
Marianne, and I think one of the things that, you know, we've talked a little bit about the sticker price when folks may go on and look at the plans, but what I think is important is just a little bit about what we've talked here, and that is that folks can at least see the plans. They can see the plans that are offered in their community. They can at least see what's being offered, and in some cases, whether vision and dental are included in those plans. So whether or not, you know, kind of you might be able to ignore the price a little bit for right now, but you can at least start to educate yourself and see what is available. And I think that's what's really helpful for folks. And then once you go online and you apply and start that enrollment process, you'll begin to see what help is available to you. And again, I mean, keep in mind, there's going to be a lot of folks here in Ohio, as well as I'm sure in Kentucky, that are going to be available with their advanced premium tax credits and those cost-sharing reductions. And even yesterday, as Medicaid expansion did go forward in Ohio, which we're very grateful for.
Yep.
So. Well, what does that mean? Jason, Kate, maybe you can address that. What does, assuming that there's talk of a lawsuit yet, but assuming it does go through with the controlling board's ruling yesterday, what will that mean for Ohio and related to the ACA?
So under the Affordable Care Act, each state is allowed to expand Medicaid up to 138% of the federal poverty level, which is approximately around $15,000 for an individual. So if you earn less than that, if your state expanded, which Kentucky has already done, you would be eligible to have Medicaid and not have to purchase insurance and go into the state Medicaid program. Ohio yesterday, the controlling board voted to accept the federal funds for the expansion, which means that now in Ohio as well, when people sign up, if their income is below 138% of the federal poverty level, they will be eligible to have Medicaid and may be able to have completely, have free insurance.
So, well, not free, they still have co-pays, right?
Well,
for Medicaid.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, maybe in Kentucky. In Kentucky, you all are listening out there, you still have co-pays with your Medicaid. But the way I think about that means everyone in Kentucky has assistance, right? Up to high enough income where you can afford it without it. So up to, $95,000 for a family of four, up to around $46,000 for a single person. But what that means is that your assistance may be so that your premium is $0 a month. So half of the uninsured in Kentucky will be paying $0 a month. And that includes
That's not Medicaid.
No, that is. I just describe it as $0 a month because I think that makes sense to people. And it includes people at minimum wage, 40 hours a week for a single person, or $10 an hour, 40 hours a week for a single parent with one child. Or a lot of people don't work 40 hours, and at 30 hours a week, it's a little higher, $8,850 for an individual person. So that includes a lot of working families, a lot of working individuals whose premium would then be $0 a month.
Jason?
And I think Kara hit the nail on the head. What it means in Ohio is we're not going to leave behind hundreds of thousands of folks, and that it really does mean that everybody's going to have access to health care. And we could not be more grateful. That's inclusive of veterans. It's inclusive of a huge number of working adults that don't necessarily have children. And it means now that all of those folks are going to be able to have access to health care. And that's really important when we think about how we're going to be able to lower health care costs overall. As a state and as a country, part of that means we're going to have to bring everybody into the system in some way, shape, or form. And I think it's really important to realize that now all of those folks will have access to that coverage, and we'll be able to start putting folks in a position where they can begin to think about wellness, they can begin to think about preventative care and so forth, all of those items that are really representative of the Affordable Care Act.
Right. If you leave people out, you're still looking at the person you're going to end up paying for the stroke instead of paying for their blood pressure pills. So if you leave people out, you still have those cost problems.
Kara, say again the figures that you said for what people have to earn or can earn and still get zero.
Right. So I try to think about it in terms of hourly wages because I think a lot of people identify closer with their hourly wage or monthly income. And so a single person can work 40 hours a week at minimum wage and be eligible for a $0 monthly premium because they can't afford to pay more than that. They could be a household of two, be a single parent, for example, or a couple with one person working and make $10 an hour, 40 hours a week, and they would still be eligible for a $0 month premium.
Now, you said something about a family of four, $95,000.
Yep. A family of four gets assistance up until just around $95,000.
But not zero. Not the zero.
No. No, because they can afford to pay. If you're a family of four and your income is getting close to six figures, you can afford to pay part of your budget. So yours would be closer to 9 to 9.5% of your monthly income for the family. That's what's considered affordable under the law.
Let's talk a little bit more about what people need to do and to be ready for, even once they get signed up. This all doesn't start until next year. So what happens once people sign up?
So you can sign up now, but your coverage doesn't start until January 1st. And in order for it to start by January 1st, the enrollment process has to be completed by December 15th. We encourage people to get ready, get on it. You can research now. You have plenty of time, so there's not any major urgency. However, the marketplaces will be open through March 31st. So even if you aren't able to enroll by the end of this year or you have a change in your life and you need to enroll at the beginning of the year, they'll still be open and you'll be able to do the enrollment process.
Yeah, this year we've got that great big six-month open window, October 1st to March 31st. But then in the following years, it'll be October 15th to December 7th, which is sort of a more normal open enrollment window. But this year, we're giving people lots of opportunities.
If they signed up March 15th or whatever the end
March
of the
31st.
March 31st, the end of the deadline, when does that start for them then?
May 1st.
May 1st. Okay, so it wouldn't start right away. You still have a little bit of a waiting period to get started. We're talking today about the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, and how it's going in its first 3 weeks. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking today about the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. My guests are health law fellow with the Kentucky Equal Justice Center, Kara Stewart, Ohio Association of Food Banks Deputy Director Jason Elkert, who is joining us on the phone, and Interact for Health Vice President for Policy and External Relations, Catherine Keller. You can join the discussion by calling us at 513-419-7100 or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And speaking of Facebook, we did have a comment there earlier today from Jane, who says, I've been trying to sign up through Connect and having various troubles getting the application to go through. She says, I can get in all right, but the website is taking me around in circles and then dumping me back at the homepage when I try to view my available plans. That said, I've been buying individual insurance from different companies on and off since 2006, and this is not significantly worse than any of the for-profit companies I've dealt with. So any advice for Jane, Kara?
Well, I guess, you know, the mantra from everyone is the same of patience and try again. But Jane can also call the hotline if she wants to check in over the phone at 1-855-4-CONNECT, which is 855-459-6328. Or she can find a connector to do it in person and or report that more to me and I'll get it to Connect to see if we can figure out if there's a specific glitch. Connect's been pretty responsive in fixing glitches when people have I let them know. So we want to make sure that they know about any glitches or circles that are being created in the system.
Now, you said that they can make a phone call, and that's also true in Ohio. Is that correct, Kara?
Kate,
sorry.
Yes, it is true in Ohio. True. That's one of the things I know about Ohio.
Sorry about that.
No, I don't know the number, though, but I think Kara has it.
Healthcare.gov does have an 800 number that you can call, and it's for English and non-English speaking, so it'll assist you both ways. It's 1-800-318-2596.
And we go to Joyce, who's joining us from Erlanger. And Joyce, you had a question about the phone calls.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I've heard that the only way to enroll is through the internet. And there's a lot of people in eastern Kentucky that have no internet, no phones, no anything. I'm talking about like the coal miners and people like that that have never, you know, had internet because there's just not available out in that area.
Well, Joyce, I can speak to that personally and professionally. I'm from Floyd County, which is in the heart of central Kentucky, far eastern Kentucky, you know, and where lots of people are coal miners. And I was there last week. I'm going to be there again this week. I'll be in Knott County, which is also a heavy coal county, on Thursday this week at the Cooperative Extension Service. And the Cooperative Extension Services are opening up their offices to events, letting people use landlines and the internet. And, of course, the website's available on all the public library computers, and we're getting the word about that also. But there's a lot of in-person events happening across the state, and I know that the connectors in those far eastern Kentucky counties are setting up lots of in-person events for people to come and use face-to-face to go over the website with a connector. A connector is a trained person to help people enroll over the phone and or face-to-face.
Joyce, does that answer your question?
That sure does. Kind of worried about how those people that, you know, they basically have nothing were going to get help.
Well, there are definitely lots of people there with smartphones and internet access, and you know, there are some people, I guess, across the state that don't have access to the internet, but there's plenty that do in every county.
Joyce, thanks for your call. Kate, tell us about Ohio, and Jason, maybe you can even jump in here too. Jason, maybe you want to go first and tell us about what you're finding, and for folks that do have troubles or don't have access to internet or even phones.
Yeah, so we're actually doing quite a few community events where we're going, you know, a lot of times the last thing we want to do is to make folks come into our office or you know, try to use an internet resource when maybe they don't have access to that. And I understand where the caller from Kentucky was talking about, where in southeastern Ohio and our kind of Appalachian areas, we have difficulty obtaining access either to the internet or so forth. So what we're doing is we're actually going out into communities. We have about 30 different events going on between October and November, and we're scheduling more and more each day. And we're actually reaching out to community partners to make sure that, you know, we're getting into communities that really need that kind of one-on-one assistance. And folks can also call our 1-800 number, where they can be connected with a navigator or with a community event or something of that nature. And our 800 number is 1-800-648-1176. And we can get folks connected all across Ohio to the right place.
And we should mention we have links to all of the websites and all the numbers and all that information on our website, which is wvxu.org. You can just click on the Cincinnati Edition page to find that information. Kate?
So I would also add that, as the president said yesterday, you can also apply on paper. So you can either call one of the lines or on, you know, you do, you will need access somehow to a paper application, which of course are online, but those don't have glitches. You can download, you can just print them. But there are resources in the community. So most of the community health centers have people on staff that you can reach out to for assistance. So there are other ways to actually apply for insurance that aren't through the internet.
Again, our phone number is 513-419-7100. Email talk@wvxu.org. Pat's calling from Eastgate. Hi, Pat.
Hi.
What's your question?
Well, I went to health.gov. My husband lost. We cannot afford.
You are breaking up, Pat. Are you talking directly into the phone there or moving around? I'm losing you a little bit there.
I'm in my car. You're
in your car. Okay, let's try again. We'll see if we can get you. If not, we may have to have you call back.
Let me pick you up.
Pat, are you there?
This might be better.
Okay, go right ahead.
I went to healthcare.gov, and my husband lost his job, and you plug in your household income, and the only plan that came up was the silver plan. It was $2,500 a year with a $6,300 deductible. Then when that is met, it's a 70-30 plan. So in essence, you have no insurance till you meet the $6,300 deductible. And it would not let me look at a gold or platinum plan.
Kate, can you address that?
Well, Pat, I'll jump in for one thing quickly about that there, or at least the federal law as I understood it, and certainly the way that Kentucky interpreted it, you can't have only one option. You have to have at least two options. So I'm not sure what's going on. Maybe something needs to be checked into there, but that shouldn't be possible for anyone to only have one option.
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend you calling the 800 number and talking with them about that, unless Jason has other ideas of why. I mean, I have looked for me and my family, and 72 plans came up. And I live in Hamilton County, which is sort of, they dictate it by healthcare markets, so we'd be in the same market. So I'm not exactly sure why. Maybe that was some sort of glitch. I don't know.
Yeah. My other comment is medical supplies. There is a movement to have medical supplies taxed, and that is in order to help pay for the health care plan. These supplies currently are non-taxed. Insulin supplies, syringes, pump supplies. I have a friend whose daughter has no kidneys. She's on hemodialysis daily.
Right,
Those
supplies are not on the consumer, right? And that's already in the law. It's not being considered in the law. That's already a part of the law. It was being discussed whether or not to remove that from the law. But those are on the producers, not toward the consumer.
Pat, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Again, our phone number, if you have a question or a comment, is 513-419-7100. Again, you can email questions talk@wvxu.org or post them on our Facebook page.
The thinking about the text is that there's going to be higher volume, right? So people that need knee braces, there's going to be at least 20% more people able to buy those knee braces, so they'd make up that in volume would be the thinking for the people making them.
One of the questions that comes up, and I just compare that to some of the health insurance plans I have here at the station, is if you have a high deductible plan, like perhaps some of these folks are getting, we have the opportunity to have an HSA account. Is that also true with the Affordable Care Act policies?
Yes, there are both regular, typical, like 80-20 plans, PPO plans, HMO plans, and HSAs out there. But that, again, depends on the market you're in. So I guess I should say that in Hamilton County, all of those popped up when I looked at them. But so across the country, that may vary depending upon the plans that were submitted by the insurance companies in that region.
And I should say HSA stands for a health savings account.
Correct.
For people that don't know. Jason, any other thoughts on that? Jason?
Did we lose Jason?
I apologize.
Yeah, but he had his phone on mute.
I had myself on mute, yeah. So you couldn't hear the fire trucks in the background.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that.
No, she's exactly right. You know, I'm looking at plans here in the Columbus or Franklin County market, and you can see whether they're child only. You can see if their health savings accounts are attached to it. And you can really take a look and see what is going to be that kind of best coverage. And it really does depend on that area where you're living in. Every plan is offering the same minimum essential health benefits. So, you know, that's something to take into consideration. And it's really what above and beyond that you really want that's going to kind of dictate what's going to work best for your family.
Right. It's exciting to think that no matter which one you look at, you know you're not getting sort of junk coverage because they all cover basic things. So every plan you're looking at covers doctor's visits, right? Like that's something that can't be left out.
What happens if you are on a plan and you've signed up and you're all set to go and then you find something else that's better and you want to switch? Are you able to do that between now and January 1st, or once you signed up, are you locked in?
I don't know.
Jason, do you know?
Well, I think you're locked in after about a month, and then you're kind of locked in once, especially until there's at least a significant family situation where maybe you've gotten married, or a special enrollment period, maybe you've moved, maybe you've changed jobs, and you know, so there are a lot of different factors that go into this. And what we're encouraging folks to do is to really kind of go back into the marketplace, whether it's to report income changes, if you're receiving an advanced premium tax credit.
That's a really good question. If your income does change, say you don't have a job or you have a low-paying job and then you get a job or a higher-paying job than you currently have, are you no longer eligible for the plan that you signed up for, and does that have to change?
Yeah, you have to report that to your marketplace. So in Kentucky, you'd report it to Connect, and you'd get a special enrollment period to change to what you're now eligible for. So, you know, I'm sure people will come, especially at that $0 a month level. People are going to come in and out of that depending on their income changes, and it's up to, you know, it's all related to your taxes, so any extra support you got that you were no longer entitled to would then be on your taxes the next year. So like Jason, I'm encouraging people, if something changes, check in with the marketplace.
Even if you just get a raise? What if you have a job and you just get a raise? Do you have to
report
that
on how much. It was a very generous raise. You know, it doubled your income or even...
So if you're making minimum wage and you get a dollar an hour increase, you're going to have to report that?
Well, the lower your hourly wage, the smaller that it would matter, right? So if you jump from $7.50 to $8.50 and you're a single person, then yeah, that might matter. But if you're someone going from 20 to 21, no, probably not. So it would sort of depend. I would say when in doubt, check.
Because, you know, they will be responsible. If you're having a subsidy and your income rises and you don't qualify for that subsidy anymore, you'll be responsible for the difference.
Right. I figure most people will be happy to check if they lose their job. People are going to go get that special enrollment period. But it's just as important if you do get that raise to go back to the marketplace.
Well. Jim's calling from Delhi. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
What's your question?
I've applied for the application for the Obamacare.
Yes.
And I thought I was enrolled, or at least my application was submitted correctly. But when I tried to go back into the system, I would not, I could not see the insurance plans or any choices. So my question, I guess, the basic question is, and then I called the 1-800 number, and I talked to a gal out of Texas, and she actually applied for me online.
So you've applied twice
then?
So
how long do I guess so. She said it didn't make any difference. I wasn't sure if I was accepted in the first place.
How do people know? That's a very good question. If someone has applied online, how do they know? Can they go back in and check to make sure the application's gone through? How do you do that?
I mean, yeah, so you'll have an account. You set up an account, so you'll be able to log in.
Yes, I have a profile. Yeah.
Right, and then they can email you.
All right, so and in Kentucky, you also get a letter in the mail. You get paper. You get your – so once you apply and it goes off to that insurance company and that insurance company sort of writes your policy, then you get that mailed to you in paper. So, I mean, I've talked to people who've received their letter from Connect or from Humana enrolling them in the plans.
I want to go back a step before that because I haven't applied for any insurance. I just applied for the right to be insured.
So you just set up your account online.
Yes, and I was told I'm going to get some kind of email or letter saying that I can now apply for insurance.
So
does that make sense?
Yeah. So when after you set up your account, it sends you a verification email that you then have to go through that email and go back into the system, and then they finish the verification process with the INS and IRS, and then you go into the purchasing section.
Okay, I did get a response says from when I talked to the gal online, she told me. I got a response which says from an email says go ahead and log back in and read this message. There was no place to read a message.
So I have been on that page.
So what do we do?
It took me 20 minutes to figure it out of playing through the internet, of trying to figure it out. And I went through, go to your profile, and then and when you look in your profile, it wants to continue to verify your identity. And that's where you actually go through the process of them verifying that you're a citizen of the United States. And I finally found this little link, and I clicked on it. And you don't actually know you're supposed to click on it because the hand of the cursor doesn't change. The cursor remains a cursor. It's a green button. And you click on it, and it takes you through the process of then continuing through the application. So that is one of the glitches that I found within the system that is you wouldn't know unless you just kept pushing buttons.
Jim, go back online, start pushing, I guess. That's the way to go.
I think I did all that. But I guess the question is there a period of time after I did that before I get something in the mail saying I can now apply for insurance?
No.
And insurance is available.
As soon as you go through that process, you should be able to shop
start
immediately.
Shopping. Yeah. There is a time after you select a plan before you get enrolled in that plan. There is a gap there for the insurance company. But once you create that account in both Ohio and Kentucky, you get to start shopping.
Jim, thanks so much for your call.
Again.
We appreciate it.
Good luck.
All right, take care.
Yep.
And again, Jim made an important point. He wanted to say he was eligible for insurance. Well, everyone is eligible for insurance. There is no longer an uninsurable person starting in January. So it's important for everyone to remember that everyone has access to health coverage.
Even if you're getting it in your employer?
They can go shop. It's not going to make any sense for them to buy it through the marketplace because they're getting it through their employer. And you can't double dip. You can't have your employer subsidize your health coverage and the government subsidize your health coverage. You're going to keep what you got more than likely. But everyone is eligible, right? So no, it doesn't matter about your current health status, your current insurance status. All of those things are irrelevant.
We're going to take a short break and continue our discussion. We've got a few phone calls online. If you'd like to join our conversation, call us at 513-419-7100 or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We've been talking about the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. My guests are health law fellow with the Kentucky Equal Justice Center, Kara Stewart, Ohio Association of Food Banks Deputy Director Jason Elkert, and Interact for Health Vice President for Policy and External Relations, Catherine Keller. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, email us, talk@wvxu.org. Or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We go now to Paul from Eastgate. Hi, Paul.
Hi. My question is this. I have a son that's 34 years old, and he's mentally challenged, and he's covered by Medicaid. Is he eligible for dental insurance under the Obamacare Act?
Medicaid does include some dental services, but he's not going to be eligible for any subsidy for any additional coverage option.
Does that answer your question?
He's got insurance through those now, through Medicaid, but it doesn't cover. He needs dental implants is what it's coming down to.
So, unfortunately, the answer to the question is no, there aren't going to be any additional resources available for him under this, either the expansion of Medicaid or the additional of insurance.
Okay, that's why I needed to know. Thank you very
much.
Thanks
for calling, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. We appreciate your call.
So, just to cover dental for everybody, so if you're on, I'm sorry, Connect is what I know, right? So, if you're on Connect, you can choose to sort by medical plans that embed dental, so that include dental for adults. All plans for children, all children's plans have the pediatric as a part of the health benefits, which include vision and dental. But for adults, you'd have to choose to add that on separately. And if you purchase your dental standalone, then there's no subsidies attached to that. But if you get a plan with it embedded, then that subsidy would still apply to the silver level.
Jason, do you want to add anything?
No, I mean, that's pretty much how it's going to operate. And I think the thing to keep in mind is, you know, when you're going through and you're thinking about this, you have to take into consideration whether you're on Medicaid or whether, you know, it goes back to the individualized decision and what your family's going to need, what you need individually, what your children need, and what does that composition of your household look like. You know, we know a lot of folks have moved in together. They may have multiple jobs, and you know, there's just a lot of factors that folks need to take into consideration about their life as we really think through how these are all going to work together.
We did get an email from Ray Van who says, what about if you have a 20 to 25 year old, should they apply for their own insurance or should they get it under their parents' plan? What's the better option? Kate?
Well, they should explore. They should look at both options. The parents' plan has to be a family plan. So if you don't have family coverage, that varies. If it's a single parent or one parent's already on Medicare and one parent's on an employer plan, it may be more affordable for that child, that adult child, to purchase their own coverage. So I would look at both options. Look at the plan that's available through the employed parent, if it's worth buying a family plan through that employer, and then also to look for the options on the marketplace for the 25-year-old, because they are also eligible for Medicaid. They're also eligible for catastrophic insurance plans for people under 30, which are cheaper insurance plans. So there are several options they can look at.
And it's also possible that it may be most cost effective to have two plans. I talked to one lady who, she was married, she was under 26, and she had employer sponsored through her husband, but she was also still on her parents because they had additional children, so it wasn't changing their cost to have the family plan with multiple children.
And that's legal to have two plans?
Yep,
like
sure
that?
Is. So you can have, you know, a secondary payer. So there's a lot, it's just recognizing that healthcare is a part of your budget, and looking at how it fits and how it fits into your annual budget and how that reflects with your taxes, because the way that we're subsidizing it to make it affordable is through taxes. So you just got to look at all of those tax implications. You know, and I refer people to accountants and insurance agents once they ask me specific questions, because I'm not that good at math.
513-419-7100 is our number. Brian's calling from St. Bernard. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
My question is regarding the health care coverage. My wife is already covered under her insurance, and we are having a baby in February.
Congratulations.
And we're not – thank you very much. We're not sure she's going to be going back to work. So my question is, at this time, do I go ahead and apply – and get this ball rolling, or do I wait until the life-changing event and then do it?
I would wait until you had a change in your household or a change in your coverage until you know that decision, right? So if she's covered through her work, then, you know, she has that coverage. And if she decides to not go back to work and then she would need a new coverage option, I would consider applying then. I don't see any benefit in...
You'll also have another child in your household.
It's not something that we need to do on the forefront, planning for that, and then
how long
there won't be a huge backlog.
How long would her coverage go if she going to be on a maternity leave where she still has coverage once the baby is born?
She still has coverage once the baby is born, and then it's the maternity leave and covered under FMLA, I guess it is.
Yeah, so I mean, just talk to her employer, and once you all make that decision, then that's when you would start planning as to when the last day of that coverage would be and the first day of your new coverage. So you'd want to make sure that you shop for some new coverage before her last day of employment or the last day that she was covered through her employer.
But then there's a little time before you apply and when you actually get covered. So should he do it like a month in advance?
Well, that's why I'm saying you got to talk to your employer. So okay. I changed jobs this past summer, and my last day at work was like on the 16th, but my insurance covered through the 30th at that job, right? So there was a 2-week, and then my new one started, and I got enrolled in those 2 weeks. So that's why the people got to talk to their employers about what the last date of coverage would be for that benefit. And then obviously you're going to know before your last day to go shop.
Brian,
the good news is you have an option for that now.
Brian, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. We go now to Samuel, who's calling from Hamilton County. Hi, Samuel. Samuel, please turn down your radio. Is Samuel there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, what's your question?
Yeah, my question is, I have insurance through my employer. Can I still apply for the Obamacare?
Yes. I mean, you certainly can go look. But if you have insurance that's affordable from your employer, then you don't qualify for a tax subsidy. So there won't be additional tax support for you to purchase insurance through the marketplaces. But yet you are certainly free to shop and look for insurance where you choose.
Okay. And I have one more question.
Okay.
What about if I lose my job at the end of the Obamacare? Am I still going to be eligible for the help?
Same. If you lose your job, then yeah, you can. If you lose your job next August, right, not during open enrollment, that would create a special enrollment period for you to go shop for health coverage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. Our phone number, if you have a question, is 513-419-7100. Anna's calling from Clifton. Hi, Anna. Anna?
I have a question regarding a group of people that fall between the cracks in both the Medicaid and the Obamacare program. For example, if you're a small business owner, all your money goes into your business. And I know very many small business owners that only draw from their accounts, and that isn't counted as income. So they're officially at zero income. And for myself, I'm not currently working, and off dividends, and my dividends are less than the standard, the 11.5 amount, whatever it is, at poverty level, and I don't qualify for Medicaid because I have assets. So going through the regular insurance route, I have pre-existing conditions, and with regular insurance companies outside the Obama plan, they're incredibly high.
Okay, what must she do there?
Well, I've got some good news for you, Anna. The asset test is removed, or at least in Kentucky it is. I don't know if that's a state to state. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is that that's across the board. There is no asset test for Medicaid. So if your income, your household size and income, is below the eligibility line, then you would be eligible for a $0 a month Medicaid option.
When I go into the state of Ohio listing Medicaid, there are certain asset requirements.
Sure. Well, Ohio's Medicaid, so that they haven't transitioned because the expansion of Medicaid was just approved yesterday.
It's very difficult when you're reading through all the bill information and descriptions of Medicaid for Ohio. It's hard to pin that information down.
So maybe the question here is, and Kate, maybe you can fill in, that maybe they need to wait a few days until this Medicaid expansion information gets out there on the web. Is that correct?
Correct. I mean, the state has to now have time to prepare their systems. The Department of Medicaid's been working diligently over the last few years to sort of what they call reform Medicaid and simplify it. You know, we've had over 150 categories of eligibility in the state of Ohio around Medicaid, and they're trying to get it down to 4. And the Medicaid expansion that was approved yesterday will allow them to accomplish that. So the enrollment process should be a lot simpler.
Anna, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. I want to get an email in from Marilyn, who said her husband is under her policy, but did she understand correctly that she can get a secondary policy through the ACA?
Well, if she has affordable coverage available to her, which sounds like she does because they have it, she wouldn't be eligible for a subsidy, Right. So she could go shop and buy a second plan, but it's doubtful that would be cost effective because she would be paying the full price for it. But she could if that's what she wanted to do.
Very good. Jason, anything else you wanted to add here?
No, I think, you know, just kind of what folks need to keep in mind is there are a lot of different options. And there are options based on, you know, very specific situations. And, you know, we had the question from the individual that does has a small business. You know, if you're one of those situations, you may want to look from a small business perspective. And then based on yourself working at that small business or as an owner of that small business. So folks just need to keep in mind that they may want to try a few different scenarios that really fit within their family situation and how it works for them. And just keep in mind that they may want to try a couple of different routes. And I think Kara said it earlier, where there are various ways that you could be eligible for different ways of qualifying or obtaining those insurance products. So folks just need to keep in mind, you know, if you have questions, call the 800 number, reach out to an in-person assister, a health center, or somebody in their area that, a community-based organization that can really talk through it with them.
I want to go now to Ray in Milan, Indiana. Hi, Ray. What's your question?
Hi. I'll try to make it real brief and short. Okay. I have a son that's going to be 26 years old. He's covered under my insurance right now, okay?
Yes.
However, he's mentally unable to make decisions, okay? He has bipolar and some other thing, okay? Once he turns 26 years old, and I don't have his permission or anything, I can't get it from him, how does he go about getting this insurance for this?
Ray, this may not be a healthcare question. This may be a legal question that you could call your local legal aid office and ask, because you may be describing something that would require you to continue to have decision-making power. We can't make those decisions for you right now, but you could help him enroll himself and go to healthcare.gov and shop with him.
Okay, so I can do that even though I don't have permission?
Help him do it.
I can help him do it.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Does that answer your question? As they said, you may want to check on the legal requirements there, or power of attorney, those sorts of things, I assume, are possibilities.
Right. I would just call your local legal aid office.
Thanks for your call, Ray. We appreciate it. Good luck. Just as we wrap up here, so if people have questions, there are plenty of places to go. Jason, as you said, you have a bunch of events going around the state of Ohio that people can find out about on our website, wvxu.org, and those are coming up over the next several weeks. Is that correct?
Absolutely, and we're going to keep adding more each day.
And in Kentucky?
You can come see me tonight at the Crazy Fox Saloon in Newport, or tomorrow at Gateway Community and Technical College. I'm somewhere every day. Go to our website, and the calendar's there publicly. But like Jason said, call the 800 number, go to Connect, call that 800 number, because there's going to be a lot of information still online. For example, we still have traditional Medicaid that's going to have different rules. And if people go to that website, they may think they're not eligible. So there's focus on those two, the healthcare.gov or connect.ky.gov for your healthcare questions.
Anything you want to add, Kate?
Yes, and if they want to submit questions, they can go to our website at reform.interactforhealth.org and submit a question.
And if you've gotten confused and what are all those websites, you can go to our website, which is easy to get to, wvxu.org. Go to the Cincinnati Edition page, and you'll be able to find all the information that you heard today and links to all of the websites and all that information as well. Thank you all so very much for being here today.
Thanks for having us. Get covered.
I want to also let you know that next Wednesday, that's 1 week from tomorrow, we will be talking about the Affordable Care Act and businesses. So we talked a lot today about personal coverage, but next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow, we'll be talking about the Affordable Care Act and businesses. I've been talking today with Health Law Fellow with the Kentucky Equal Justice Center, Kara Stewart, Ohio Association of Food Banks Deputy Director Jason Elkert, and Interact for Health Vice President for Policy and External Relations, Catherine Keller. Cincinnati Edition is produced by Pete Reitmeier. Today's technical director was Bruce Ellis. Our engineering staff is Don Danko, Bill Dean, and Mike Makinich. We also had help today from Kevin Reynolds. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.